I'd like to have you tell me about what it was like to live on that ranch at Mount Glenn. I think you said you were there for 60 years, wasn't it?
Well, I was there until I married, and I was still
Mount
Glenn.
Oh,
I was
he's talking about Mount Glenn.
Mount Glenn,
oh,
not Glass Canyon.
Yes,
Mount,
I guess we did.
Mount Glenn.
Oh, it was wonderful. It was a nice home, and I had lots of good days there. And we had dogs and cats.
Now, I think you said this was a mink and fox ranch?
When they bought the land,
before?
Were going to buy the mink, I think, but they had silver foxes.
Now, who was they?
He and my husband and his brother.
I see.
And later they got the mink. They might have had the mink then, I'm not sure. But anyway, they raised lots of mink, and Frank's brother stayed in a little cabin up there at the mink ranch and took care of the mink because so he could be close to them and no one would bother him. Then they had a big dog called Queen. She was a German Shepherd. But she wouldn't let anybody hardly come close to her, except if somebody came in and bothered the mink, why she was a bargain. And so they tied her up to, I think they put a clothesline up and put her on it. And she never took to me until after they sold the mink and the foxes. His brother came to live with us, and he had old Queenie in, put her outside the back door with there was a clothesline out there too, and he put her on it, and she seemed to be satisfied, and she didn't take to me for a while, and then all of a sudden, why, she thought I was all right, and she'd let me go up and pet her.
Tell me more about what's involved in raising mink.
Well, they're just born kind of like kittens. They call them kits, I think. And then they get a little bigger all the time. They never get very big. And then they buy horses that's going to be killed or horses that are no good anymore. And they use lots of fox meat or lots of cow meat if somebody wanted to get rid of a cow. We had many a horse and cow that was still good when we got it and kept it several years. Jerry remembers that.
Mm-hmm.
We had that one cow named Daisy that we had several years.
Yeah.
She was sold to us as a fox cow. And then the mink, as they grew older, I think they had to be about a year old. Why, they'd have what they call pelt them. And they'd, I never did see them kill them, but they did. They either hit them in the head or shot them or something. Anyway, they killed them. And they'd take the pelts and put them on a board. And then when they were dried, they put them all together, and men would come from someplace and offer them so much for the pelts, and they wanted to get the largest price, but they never did get too much. And there was one man that came from Minnesota, and he wanted to buy the pelts. And I told Frank at the time, I says, I don't like his eyes. I don't think I'll sell to him. Well, they didn't pay attention to me, and they went ahead and sold him, and they didn't get a penny out of it.
Mm.
He took him home, and that was the last we ever heard of him.
How much do you think?
I remember his name, yes. Yeah, Pouliot.
How much do you think they were trying to get per pelt?
Oh, around $35 or a little more. Now, one time when they pelted the foxes, they said I could have a fur for my neck, or I could have the money. Well, I was in hard times, and I took the money.
Yeah.
And I bought a clock with it, and the clock is still up on a bookcase in the library, except it doesn't run very much. I don't know what you do.
Which library?
In ours.
Oh, okay. Now, did you also have an orchard there?
Yes, we had 105 acres in cherries.
That's a lot.
Yes, it was a lot when they went to pick them. And they mostly got to, well, when it started out, they were mostly white people. And then the Mexicans started to come in and they turned to hiring the Mexicans.
Yes.
And, the white and the Mexicans just didn't mix. And it seemed like when the whites were picking and then they, Mexicans started coming in, why they quit. They didn't come in anymore. Mm-hmm.
But before they could be picked, the cherry trees had to have a lot of attention, I suppose.
Yes, they had a lot of attention.
What sorts of things needed to be done?
They were cultivated, and we didn't have water, so they couldn't have water. But some years it was hard on it because we didn't have enough water. But they cultivated them ever so often, and then they got that cherry worm, they called it, and it just took over. They tried to eradicate it, but just couldn't. It seemed like it always gotten some of the cherry, and they crawl into the cherry and lay their eggs.
Yes.
And then the pupa, I guess they call it, would come out in the spring and fall on the ground.
Yes.
And then they develop into the cherry, to the fly.
Right.
And there isn't much difference in the looks of the fly and the normal fly. Normal fly couldn't do that much damage.
Was your husband using a pesticide?
Oh, yes.
That didn't affect the worm?
They finally decided that they couldn't use one very strong because the Cherry Association, they belonged to one down at Salem First and Paulus Brothers. And they decided if they put it on too strong or people got the feeling they were getting cherries that had that on them.
Poison, yes.
And so they changed to something else, and something you could use, but I think the next day you could use the fruit, the other you couldn't, you had to wait quite a while.
Uh-huh.
And they turned to rotenone or something that you could put on, and then just a few days you could pick them or eat them or anything, and they wouldn't hurt you as long as they were washed off good. We always told people that we had you pick, and I'd say at least hundreds of people used to come out and pick the cherries, and Frank would always tell them to wash them before they ate them.
Right.
But I know some of them would have children with them. Those children would go with them up in the orchard to pick, and they'd come out with juice from head to foot. They'd been eating them.
Couldn't wait.
He told some of them he should have weighed them before they went up.
Yes. How much did they sell them for?
Oh, about the average was about 6 cents a pound.
6 cents a pound. Now, this would have been about when, in the 1950s and 60s?
Well, Jerry and Dale, I think, were both in college by the time. When was it, 50?
Well, you had bearing cherries from about 1942 until about 19, until you moved to town.
See, they bought that place thinking they would have a place for the animals, but when they bought it, they put out the first cherry orchard. They planted a small one out north of the house. And, of course, that one came into bearing first. And then they planted here and they planted there until I finally got... Frank was called the king cherry grower of Union County.
Oh.
Garcia.
This is your father?
Yes.
Yeah. Was that because he had so many cherries, or because he was so good at it, or both?
Because he had so many acres of
cherries.
I think Mr.
And talked a lot.
Yes, he'd rather talk than eat.
Well, can you make, could you make a living at that time out of cherries, or was this just a
sideline? Well, we'd saved enough that Frank thought he had, my husband thought he had enough to keep us in our old age, but he'd be here now, he'd be fooled.
So he had other work besides the cherry orchard then, I suppose.
Well, no, we didn't work any place else.
Really?
You had variety fruit.
Kept them busy there.
You might talk about the variety fruit a little bit.
Well, we had the Roy Lands and the Bings and the Lamberts and the Vans and see, like there was one other one.
Those are all cherries, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
See, the Van is a one that they pollinate with.
Oh, is that V-A-N?
It looks like a Bing. Mm-hmm. Oh, and the Bing, yes. Then the Roy Land looks like, no, not a Bing. The Van looks like a Bing, yes.
The Rainier is the one you're thinking about that looks like a Royal Ann.
What one did I say?
Yeah, I think you said both.
Oh, yes, Royal Ann's the one that, it's a good cherry. And then there was a Ray Deer that came later, and first it was an awfully good cherry, but when he first got one to try it, he bought a lot of his plant, of his starts up at Wenatchee. And they talked him into trying that kind, and he got a few trees, one or two, but we liked them better than the Royal Ants, indeed. But they were so soft when you canned them. They said, oh, they'll never go over as a canned cherry because they're too soft. And so he finally took out what he had, because he thought that they wouldn't be any good. I think he went left one tree for us to eat on, and about 4 or 5 years later, they decided the Van was a cherry. The Rainier was a cherry. And now they do anything to get Van or get Rainier cherries. They like them.
Mm-hmm.
And, but they are a softer cherry to can.
Mm-hmm. He must have shipped many of the cherries by train.
He hauled them to, and Jerry and Dale both helped to haul them to Embler. And there they started them, and they had a woman by the name of Mrs. Gale that was head of that for when he first started. And they'd sort them out and pack them in boxes. And then you'd take the top off, and there'd be those pretty cherries.
Uh-huh.
And they shipped most of them east.
Yeah.
Frank always say he lived for the day he could take it some by airplane, but he didn't get that made done.
Uh-huh. Were these packed in wooden boxes?
Yes.
And where were they made?
Well, I imagine they were made probably down in Salem or somewhere
there,
and then he'd buy them.
The packing boxes were made right there at the packing plant, Mom.
Oh, yes.
Remember when Clyde Wilson would make those boxes?
The pieces of the wood had come,
yeah.
And it cut the kit like a kit, and you put it together, and you had a box.
Uh-huh.
I think the kits may have come from Salem, the wood parts.
Yes.
Were these boxes maybe 4 or 5 inches
high
on the side?
About that, not any taller than that, and then about yay long.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the end of it, it'd have a big pattern or, a tag on there that'd say
sticker.
Pumpkin Ridge Growers Cherries.
Pumpkin Ridge Growers Cherries.
Pumpkin Ridge Cherry Association is what he belonged to.
Uh-huh. So there were several orchardists who contributed to that?
Yes, there were probably 12 or 15 that had cherries that took to that.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have they've gone back to start again, almost like they start over again. They're having a cherry bear over their cove now. And,
yes.
And they have two cherry associations. Mr. Nims was the one that Frank belonged to, and he moved away. And but the Les Miller and Louis Lance, and Louis Lance is gone now. Somebody told me, I guess it's Zelda, that Les Miller still lives over there. And he came from Michigan and settled over there.
Now, tell me a little more about Pumpkin Ridge. I've heard that name, but I don't know where it is.
Well, it's north of LeGrand out here where that little knoll goes over this way. You go toward Ambler.
Yes.
And just before you get into Ambler, a mile or two miles or something like that, there's a road takes to the right.
Uh-huh.
And that that land on your right is what they call Pumpkin Ridge.
I see. And Mount Glen would be on about the same level or same line with that?
Just about.
Uh-huh. And Imbler was kind of the place where all these cherries were brought together and packed.
Yes. Uh-huh. He also farmed a farm over east of Imbler a little ways that his dad had of wheat. And he didn't do that during cherry season. Well, yes, he'd done that some after we were married. But not very much. He finally sold it. And Mr. and Mrs. Rule lived out there, and Mr. and Mrs. Kennel. And
it's part of the Sharon and Bob Beck ranch now.
Yes, and Stacklin, where did he come in at?
I'm not sure I know the name, but I don't know more than that.
I've heard of Stacklin and Cove.
Yeah.
I wonder, all the people who raised cherries in that area friendly with one another?
Oh, yes. Very friendly.
Was it in the best interest of all of them to be friendly, to cooperate, rather than to compete?
I think so. And all that I knew in the valley were friendly.
Were they all getting about the same prices for their cherries?
Yes, the ones in the association all got the same price.
Uh-huh. I suppose some of them thought they had better cherries than others.
Well, I imagine they did.
They'd sort them. Remember that, how they'd sort them, and they'd weigh the culls.
Yes.
And deduct that from what you brought in, and they'd sort your cherries separate from somebody else's. So while they were all mixed together and when they were packed, you actually got paid for the quality you brought in.
That's good. Almost scientific.
Yeah, you know.
Was all the sorting done by hand, or were there machines that could do it?
No, it was all by hand.
Uh-huh. And were the sorters women mostly?
No, there was that one woman and maybe one or two or three others, but the rest were men.
Oh. Was it hard, difficult work?
Well, they just stood there at those boxes all the time. There's a belt that went along, and these boxes were on the belt, and they stood there and dumped them out and started them right as they went by.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like Lucille Ball eating that candy.
It must not have been very difficult then to see which ones were culls.
No, I don't think they had any problems.
Well, why do you think it was mostly men who did it?
Well, I don't think it was mostly men.
Oh, I thought you said just one or two women.
I think the men dumped the boxes, didn't they? They dumped the cherries on the belt, and the women would do the sorting.
Yes, I believe they did.
And then the men would do the lidding.
But I can't remember how many men they had. Do you?
No, but they had quite a few. I suppose there were probably about 10 men and maybe 40 women working it when they were busy packing.
Something like that.
Now I'm going to take a guess. The main time that the cherries would be picked and packed would be sometime in July. Is that right?
Yes. About the middle of July.
For about how many weeks?
Oh, about 3 or 4 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Generally, often we were through by the 1st of August.
I see.
And then we'd take a camping trip up Lostine River.
Ah. And when would the money start coming in from the sale of those cherries?
Oh, sometimes in December and sometimes not until the next year.
How did you get by?
I don't know. That wasn't my word, so I had something to eat.
Well, were you getting most of your food from the farm with chickens and vegetables?
I imagine a lot of it, and then Mother kind of saw what she cooked and what she made and
now,
things.
Now we're going back to your mother. I mean, when you were married and your husband was operating the orchard.
Oh, we just ate.
I know, but
if
there wasn't any money coming in, how did you get the food?
I know, but we seemed to always have enough to buy a loaf of bread and have something to eat, I guess.
Maybe he was a good saver.
Oh, he was.
Oh, that's the answer.
That's the reason we had the money to keep us at when we got old.
Did Christian Science have anything to do with this?
Well, it had a lot to do with him, I know, because he found it one time when his mother was alive, and she was probably about 70 years old then, and his dad was alive, and his dad had heart trouble. And a lady came down there in a buggy one day and talked to her, and then she said, "Why don't you try Christian Science?" And his mother said, "Well, I don't know what it is, but is it anything that will hurt him?" And she said, "No, it won't hurt him a bit, and maybe it'll help him." She said, "Well, anything would help him, or she'd try it." So it wasn't long till she come down again, and she brought her book. And he began to get better, and he got up and worked around and lived until he was, I think he was 92, or was he?
He was in his mid-80s, I think.
Mid-80s.
84, 86, something like that.
He lived quite a bit longer than they thought he would. And so from that day on, I think up till that day, Frank, my husband, was pretty skeptical, but he said after his dad was healed, well, he wasn't skeptical anymore.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it helped him in his farm work?
Yes, it was bound to. Because he never saw anything wrong with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked to anybody, whether he knew him or not.
Uh-huh.
And
he was a positive kind of a man.
Yes, and he was always laughing and joking.
He was pleasant to be around, I'll bet.
Yes, and he enjoyed life.
Yes. Now, you told me that you saw quite a few rattlesnakes and blue racers out by Mount Glen.
Not too many rattlers. There were some out in the garden, and one out in the garden around a bean. And then there was some of my brother and his wife had a little house over. We had a prune orchard over across the road from my house.
She's back. She's back.
And they saw some in that orchard.
Yeah. I suppose in Ladd Canyon there would have been more snakes than there were at Mount Glen.
Yes,
Glen.
As you went up the road, when they built that highway, they said they found lots of snake
yes.
dens.
Well, I suppose when you were in your early married years at Mount Glen, that there were a lot of other living creatures, birds and other animals out that are not as many now.
We never saw some of the animals they spoke of that were there before we were. Was that the bobcat, and I don't think we saw any of those. And
you had bear.
Yes, there were bear up there.
Elk, cougar.
Dad trapped some along the creek and picked up the money that way. He got mink and
dad did.
He caught skunks and
yeah. And you told me a little about the one-room school at Mount Glen.
Yes.
And you taught there for a week, you said.
Where I taught was out in Mount Glen.
Yes. What do you remember about the school itself?
Ladd Canyon?
No, Mount Glen.
Oh, I can remember it well because it's still there now. It's a one room, and I had many happy days there playing with the kids and going to school there.
Can you tell me what it looked like exactly inside?
Well, there were these desks they were regular school desks made out of wood, and they came this way and went this way and
yeah.
went this way.
Yes.
Then you put the back up when you got up. But just studying, reading, writing, and arithmetic, that's all we had.
What kinds of things did you see on the walls?
Well, the blackboards were on one wall, and I think she had a map of something I've forgotten. Do you remember, Jerry? What the teacher would have up there.
Probably a map of the United States.
Seeming like it was a map of the world.
Okay. Yes. And bookcases for textbooks?
They were in another room. We had what we called it was a one-room school, but it had one little room on the southeast corner and one over here on the south. On the northwest corner,
uh-huh.
and the one over here on the right had books in it that you could go and look at.
I think you're out of Lad Canyon now, aren't you?
Oh, I'm still Mount Glen.
Yeah, I think Eugene's talking about the Mount Glen school.
Well, we didn't have any library there.
Yeah, I think he wants you to describe that schoolhouse.
I think we just had a one-room schoolhouse, and that was it.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking about it because you said you taught there for a week.
Yes.
So I thought maybe you would have some memories from those
5 days
when you taught there.
I remember. I was sure surprised when they came and wanted to know if I'd teach.
Yes.
The woman that was sick or something,
yes.
couldn't teach. And I can't remember just what I'd done.
Okay.
I just got the books, I guess, and
uh-huh.
helped them read and things.
Sure, have a reading lesson and a spelling lesson and an arithmetic lesson, and that's the day.
Well, there might have been. Might have been, and I read those to them. But Jerry said I did all right. I thought I was fine. I'm a poor teacher.
Well, let's move to what you remember about some of the stores in La Grande. You saw them both when you were quite young. And, of course, you saw them many times the rest of your life. You mentioned last time the Ford Garage, for instance.
Yes.
And you said something about road shows, I think.
Yes.
Would you call them Toby shows?
They were tent shows.
Tent shows.
The great big tents he'd be in.
And what kind of shows were they? Not like a circus, I suppose.
Oh, about like a circus. He'd be funny, and sometimes he'd put on the play and we get to see it, but ordinarily they just dance and talk and
variety shows then.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And were these in the summertime?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How much did it cost you to get in?
I think about 25 cents.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't very much.
Did lots of people come?
Yes, sir, mostly. There aren't a few people there.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was right down in La Grande,
yes,
maybe across from the old post office?
Right across from the post office, right behind where the Ford Garage was.
Mm-hmm. That was just a vacant lot then,
yeah.
Was it?
Huh?
Was that just a vacant lot?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Hadn't the Chinese lived around there earlier?
Well, yes, they were right in that block, only on the southwest corner,
mm-hmm.
where there are places that they had the noodle parlor. And we have a Chinese lady here, but I asked her if she ever remembered the Mary's Noodle Parlor in the Grand, but she didn't. And
did you ever talk with any of the Chinese people?
Well, not unless we went in their store
mm-hmm.
and talked to them, I guess.
I don't suppose they spoke English very well.
No.
What were your impressions of how they lived?
Well, as kids, we didn't think much of it. We just knew they lived there, and my husband delivered the coal for a while, and he said he would take the coal, and there'd always be a black man down there, and he was ready to fix the coal someplace down there, and he said he'd look down there, and then there'd be those black eyes looking at him.
Well, other stores in town. What was Silverthorne's?
Silverthorne's was a drugstore, and it was right in there where Wilma Glasson's used to be there. Do they still have a store?
Yes, they do.
And then in the block below there, east of there, there was a Piggly Wiggly, and there was a Safeway in there.
Yes, there was.
And one called the Golden Rule Store. Mm-hmm. We're given a tour by the Golden Rule.
Now, when you walk down the Adams Avenue in La Grande and these stores, it was a very different feeling 50 years or more ago from what it is now, wasn't it?
Well, yes, I suppose it was, but we didn't seem to pay any attention to anything like that as children.
But when you'd walk down the street, would you go into several of the stores?
No, not too many. If we were headed for one, there was a restaurant there, White's restaurant. They always had a white tablecloth on the table. Mm-hmm. And Mother would take me in there lots of times when we'd go down to get a piece of pie or something for afternoon dessert. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what Penny's used to be where they are. Seems like they've been there a long time. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about Penny's.
Well, the original store, I think, was on Depot Street. You can see the name Penny's written up on the bricks.
Maybe so.
Did you go to Montgomery Ward's store?
We did when it came in, yes. We went there a lot.
What sorts of things would you buy there?
Well, shirts and clothes of different kinds. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I remember one day I had bought some tweed perfume, or somebody had given it to me. And I went in there, and one woman says, "Oh, you smell good." She says, "You've got some of that tweed perfume on." And I said, "Yes, I do." She says, "Well, I sure like it, and I don't think they even manufacture it anymore."
And you knew Midge Wright.
Yes.
What do you remember about her?
Well, I knew her pretty well, and I'd go in there lots of times to get a soda or to eat, and they'd serve lunch in there. And when I was going to high school, I'd go in there.
You think she cooked it?
Yes. They cooked a real good lunch. Mm-hmm. And her husband, Leon, he always helped her.
Yeah.
And when they left there, I didn't know it at the time, but of course they moved the things out so somebody else could go in, and then they found lots of ice cream chairs and tables down there, they said. And I remember when she had some upstairs, but those were in the basement, and they all had that wrought iron around the top of them. And a seat to sit on.
I think I told you that we have four of those at our house.
Oh, do you?
Yes, we do.
Oh,
I know they came from Mitch Wright because Marcia's mother was a good friend of hers.
Oh, you're lucky.
Yes, I know we are. And furthermore, I painted them all up so they're bright, shiny gold now.
Oh, they are.
They look terrific.
I'll bet they do.
But I knew Mitch Wright a little bit too. Describe the kind of person she was.
She was very friendly, and
yes.
And she was a nice person to have in a store like that, because she always welcomed you in, and she was glad to serve you, and I knew her for several years, and she was just nice.
Do you remember what she did with the glasses that you'd get a soda or a Coke in?
No, I don't have any idea.
You don't? That's what I remember. She kept all those glasses with a little bulge at the top in the freezer. And every time she was, even if she was just going to give you a glass of water, she'd reach in and get one of these glasses, and of course it would get frosty on the outside right away.
Uh-huh.
And I was very delighted at that. I'd never been served a glass of water that way before, ever. It was really special.
I remember some store that I went into that they did that, but don't seem like it was her stores.
And she knew just about everything that was going on in town, I thought.
Yes, I think she did.
But maybe she talked too much, do you think?
Well, she did talk a lot.
She listened pretty well, too.
Yes, she did.
Yes. And I thought that was just about the perfect example of the old-fashioned drugstore.
Yes, yes it was.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the sheet music in the window?
Yes.
With fly specks on it?
I think so.
It didn't sell very fast.
And then she had a daughter, didn't she?
I don't know. I never met her.
I think they had a daughter. Mm-hmm. See, like her name was Marcia.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know where she would be now.
Was the Silverthorne's drugstore different from Midge Wright's?
Yes, it was different. It had a soda fountain in there, and it was, as you went in, well, it was on your right.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had old books and miscellaneous things in the back part of it,
mm-hmm.
things for school, and quite a few things that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, there had also been a Moon's drugstore. Did you know about that one?
Oh, yes, we knew the Moon boys well.
Was that a drugstore like the Wrights?
Well, yes, inside it was similar, but they had a fountain there too, where they served sodas and ice cream and things. They didn't serve, I don't believe they served a lunch, but they had all different things in there, and in the back they had books and composition books and things that the youngsters needed at school.
Why do you think LeGrand had so many drugstores?
I don't know. That one of those Moons, you know, just passed away just a short while ago, a woman, and I think she was married to I don't know, it was Ed, it wasn't Ed, and I think it was Eugene. Eugene was married too, but not to this one. But anyway, it came out in the paper that she passed away. Her name was Laura. And I've forgotten which one she did. Harry, I believe, was the one she was married to. And mother used the Moon's drugstore. It was her doctor last time something would be the matter with us kids. And she'd go to them and talk to them to see what she should give them. And one time I had arthritis in my knee, and I couldn't get rid of it, and was in bed and for quite a while with it, and so she went in there and they gave her some liniment that you took by mouth, some medicine, and she started to give me that, and she said I went to sleep and I never woke up. She thought I died. But I was asleep, but it started, that bad knee started getting better, and I still complain about it, but it hurts some now, but it got better then.
In the Sacagawea Hotel, I think you told me that you went in there a few times.
Yes.
Did you do anything more than just walk around in the lobby? Did you see other parts of it?
Well, I was upstairs, and it had a balcony, I remember that it did, and then you went into to a ballroom.
Yes.
And then there was another one down this, you came out there and went that way, and there was another one down there. And
the little ballroom and the big ballroom, that's what they
yes.
call them, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
And then did you see it soon after it was built?
Yes.
Or was it quite a bit later?
No, we saw it when it was being built.
Mm-hmm.
Because most people didn't want the old one torn down.
No.
They were real mad about that.
That was a bad idea.
Because Mr. Roche built that one, and my husband said it could stand an earthquake.
Yep.
And
a hurricane, too.
Yes. And the soldier boys stayed up there for quite a while, and they had training here, I think, and they'd hang out those windows, and when you go by, well, they'd be hanging out.
Oh, whistling at the girls?
Oh, yes, of course.
Where were they training, up at the college or at the armory?
That part I don't know.
Probably at the armory.
See, the armory goes down at the end of Oak or some
Pioneer Park, yeah. Mm-hmm. We walked down there on Sunday. Look at it.
Oh, yeah.
Were there high school functions or other kinds of social functions held often at the Sacagawea?
No, I don't remember many social functions. Lots of times there'd be lectures of some sort, and they'd have them there.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that.
The ballrooms.
A friend of mine and I, they used to go in there a lot and eat. They served good lunches.
Mm-hmm. There was a coffee shop, wasn't there?
Yes, I think that's where we went.
Mm-hmm. So the ballroom wasn't used a lot for dancing?
Just like, I think, maybe on Saturday night they opened it up. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. There's another place that I know was used for dancing right behind the Sacagawea Hotel. It was called Zuber Hall.
Yes.
Do you remember Zuber Hall?
I remember it, but faintly. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't remember what they'd done except they roller skated there.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember very much about that.
Uh-huh. What did it look like? I don't think I've ever seen a picture.
It was just a great big hall. It was one room, and just a big room,
mm-hmm.
and a floor on it that they could dance or roller skate or whatever they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you know who Zuber was?
No, I didn't know him.
Do you think it was somebody who lived in La Grande?
I think it was when it was originally built.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I believe he lived in La Grande, but he passed away, I think, before I came into the picture.
Uh-huh. That must have been there before the Sacagawea Annex was built.
Yes, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Roche was a prominent man in La Grande, I think.
Very much so.
Yeah. How had he made his money? Was it through milling or flour mills?
Oh,
like
where was he before he came?
Or was he a brewer?
You know, I can't tell you for sure.
Did you ever meet him?
Didn't ever meet him. I passed him and things several times to know who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And her, too. I know she, one time there was a group of us from high school going home in the evening, and we passed under a chestnut tree. Well, there were those that fall off, you know, and they'd fallen on the ground, and there were several of them here and there. And so we picked up one to look at them, and boy, she came to the door, and she ran us off in a hurry.
Don't you pick up my chestnuts? Is that what she
said? Didn't want anybody picking them up. It was right across where they lived, was right across from the library.
Oh.
Where that vacant lot is.
Oh, yes. What kind of a house was that?
It wasn't anything fancy. It was a white house turning green, and it was just a one that came up like this, and the windows in front, and then came this way and this up.
Did it face the library then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And just the one house on that block?
Yes, I believe it was.
And now it's an eyesore.
Sure is.
No, I think they moved it.
Oh,
or is it still there?
No, he meant the vacant lot that's there now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now used to have a car wash there.
Yes, yes. And you can still see the bumps remaining. The Stangs. Was August Spang still living when you were coming
to Grand? Yes, I went to school with his two daughters.
Did you?
Ann and Jane.
Uh-huh. Now, was it you who told me that he built a little theater in the basement of the house just for those daughters?
And when we went up on day to have a picnic with Marjorie and Pat McClure, they took us through the house, and that platform was still there.
Uh-huh. They just did their own little shows. They didn't have anybody from outside.
Built for the youngsters.
Yes. Yes. What else did you hear about the Stangs?
Well, just they had a lot of money.
Yes, they surely did.
And I went to school with both of them, but I think Ann graduated first. I believe Jane was the youngest, and they were both nice girls. But I can't remember anything special about them.
Besides the house that Mr. Stang built, why do you think that we should remember him and his family?
Well, just that he had a lot of money, I guess.
Well, I don't know. Did he do good things for the community?
Well, not especially that I knew of. He probably entered into some of them, but I don't think he gave any large amounts.
Okay. Do you think Mr. Roche left more valuable things to LeGrand or made more contributions?
I didn't hear of it anyway.
Other than the hotel?
He had a son, he since passed away, but he had a son, and he probably left everything to him.
Uh-huh. How do you think people in LeGrand at that time felt about those in LeGrand who had a lot of money?
Well, I don't think they paid more than their own business more than they did somebody else's, I think. They didn't, you know, me, he might have put some money in the sawmill. I can't, to me, like, he kind of runs with that, but I'm not sure about that.
Were they?
Mr. Stang, that would have been. Mr. Stang built a mill.
Uh-huh.
He built what was called the Bowman Hicks.
Oh, yes.
And it was down there where the fair is.
Yes.
And he built, that one wouldn't have been in LeGrand if it hadn't been for him, because he did build that, and then he built that big guy smokestack, and they couldn't get anybody to go up and paint it but my husband's brother. And he told him he'd go up and paint it, and he did. And I doubt if many people would have gone that high.
Do you have any idea how he got himself up the chimney?
No, I don't. I don't know whether he had a rope on the board or how he got up there. He might have.
It'd be hard to know how you'd get a rope out on the top.
Yes. I'm not sure how he got up there, because I heard about it afterward.
Mm-hmm. Now, that reminds me of the sugar beet factory. Did you ever see that?
Well, it was down there next door to that Foster home where I live.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the front of it because my brother worked there. And what
was he doing there?
He worked for the county. That was the county shops.
Oh, I see. After they stopped trying to do anything with sugar beets. Uh-huh.
While they were in the factory, my husband has told me lots of stories about that. They had a train that run all up to the factory, and he had a lot of fun going up there, and I guess he got on the train and rode that far. And he used to tell about some good times they had up there. So I know it was there when he was little. And his home was about a half a mile from there, down to the river.
Oh, now, would that be the time, do you think, when they were actually trying to process sugar beets? I know that wasn't for very long.
I don't know whether they processed them or what they did with them.
Yeah, I think they were then.
But they sure got in a lot of sugar beets, I guess. And come to find out that it's right across the street and to the right a little bit from where I am now.
Is that right?
You go by, if you go back up Z Avenue where that beer distributing place is, that's part of the old sugar beet factory. The big building in the back there was the county shops, and before that it was, I guess, probably the maintenance building or something, the sugar beet factory.
Oh.
And the land behind us where a lot of the other stuff was.
I didn't know that. I didn't realize
there was a
new house
on the right as you go. You can go beyond that, and there's a brick house on the right, two-story kind of. And I think that probably, this I don't know for sure, but probably was the manager's house. The house
on the right or the left?
On the right, going up towards Y Avenue.
I mean, the house is this way. You know, that's where.
Yeah, you're east and a tiny bit north of the. You're pretty much just due east of where the sugar beet factory was. Yeah.
I don't know who lived in those houses over there. I know who some people lived over on this side, across from where I am now, was Bill Townsend, you know, lived over there. And
yeah.
The Abbots, I think, and different people.
I think Dad played on the sugar beet piles. He would probably have been, you know, from 6 to 12 years old, and the kids would go over there and scramble around on the sugar beet piles, and then they'd get chased off and, I guess, rode the train and, you know, whatever trouble kids could get in.
Yeah.
But I think it was gone by like 1910 or
Yeah, and that was very early in the century.
Yes, I just remember the stories that he told me.
So the train you speak about, was that a spur line from the main line?
Yes, I think it was. I think it would load with sugar beets and then go.
Would it come up Spruce Creek?
Down the railroad.
In that area?
I think it probably more likely, I'm just guessing, but more likely came out in kind of through the mill property over here and went onto the Island City Strip spur line, maybe. But they had a spur, you know, there's a spur line on the other side of 2nd Street.
No, I didn't know.
Yeah, there's a spur line that goes on the other side of 2nd Street. You can still see the roadbed. I'm not sure how much the rails are there yet. But if you drive down 2nd, beyond Y Avenue, past Riveria School, and go over a block or two, you'll see the railroad there.
So do you think this spur line was built just for the sugar beet factory or for something
else?
Maybe something else, too.
It might have. I don't know.
Mm.
I didn't know anything about it until my brother started working there.
Mm-hmm.
He was the
county and finally that.
I see.
The other brother worked there, too. And they had a what do you call those holes you drill in the ground? Get dirt out.
You're not talking about a post hole.
No, bigger than a post hole.
Bigger than that.
A quarry?
What was the hole there for?
Dirt.
Just to, well.
Oh, heck, what is that? I know it as well as my own, and they've got one.
Are you talking about a rock pit?
Right, a rock quarry.
Rock quarry.
Rock quarry, sometimes they call them, yeah.
They built one of those there.
Let's talk a little bit, to finish up, about weather. It's always a good subject. You told me that the blizzards that you remember around here were worse than the snow we've had recently, and you had to have a cap with holes for the eyes, and you walked backwards in the blizzard. When the heavy snows came, and I don't suppose there was a lot of equipment to get rid of the snow.
No,
did everything slow down, or did people stay home more?
Yes, I think they stayed home more.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't get out because it drifted snow.
Mm-hmm. And after several days of that, what did you hear people saying to each other about the snow?
Well, they were wishing it go away, not like we did this winter, so they could get out. And they were wishing spring it or you haven't come.
You heard that a lot.
Yes.
Was there anything else people didn't like about the snow? Because it's pretty in lots of ways.
No.
They just got tired of it?
Just except going places, I think.
Yeah.
It seemed like the snow got pretty deep, and we had a bobsled somebody'd made, and I remember going with a horse hooked to it and going down the road. Jerry built a box, a big box, and he put us all the big box, three of us, he and me and his brother Johnny. Do you remember that, Jerry? It's along there about almost to the third corner of the box. Fell over.
Yeah, I remember doing that. Yeah, that was an old bobsled that didn't have any box on it. I built one for it. Yeah. I tried to rebuild a buggy too, but that didn't work either.
He was great to build it, and he built a bookcase, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At high school, and their last days, he built one, and we had to go and get it, and we went up to get it, and it's just a pile of lumber.
I spent a whole year in the eighth grade building a bookcase that never did get put together. I wasn't much of a carpenter.
No.
I can do a little better than that now, but not much.
At least you can hit the nail in the head.
Yeah. I spent that year sanding, I think.
And in the summertime, were there many, many hot days?
Well, where our house was, there was willow trees all the way around it.
Uh-huh.
It was a pretty cool house. In the late afternoon, it got kind of warm because the sun went down in the west. But
now
it
this
was,
is in
it was cool. There's a rule where we could find plenty of shade.
Uh-huh. And in Mount Glen, was it like that too?
Well, it was a two-story house too, and it stayed pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It kept kind of hot in the summer, but not real bad.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of cool drinks did people have in the summertime?
Well, mostly lemonade.
With real lemons?
Yes. I think sometimes, pretty soon, what's that other aid they have now?
Kool-Aid?
Kool-Aid came in, and some of them used some of that.
Yes.
But I don't like that.
Uh-huh.
And
iced tea.
Yes, I guess they need some iced tea.
And of course, at that time, I suppose you were using refrigerators to make the ice.
I imagine so.
But in earlier days, you didn't have the refrigerators. So, did you tell me that some people you knew would go out to frozen lakes and chop pieces of ice and bring it back and put it in an ice house?
Well, and where my husband had his ice pond, the pond would freeze over, you know, and the year Jerry was born, it was 22 below zero.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the ice pond was all frozen. And he could get ice out there, and he lived right by the river, and it would freeze along the edge, and he'd get ice out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we got it that way.
They put up ice in an ice house and put sawdust in the walls and everything, and then that's how they kept their business going in the 20s and early 30s, was store the ice in that ice house, and it was all natural ice, and the water was out of the river.
Were you ever aware of concern about polluted water?
That was in my dictionary.
Mm-hmm. Were you worried about air pollution?
I wasn't worried about anything, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. How close to paradise was it to live in the Grand Ronde Valley?
Well, it was paradise itself. Mother said when she came into the valley with a covered wagon that this valley was all grass, green grass, but that the Indians would burn it off in the fall. And then that make the green grass come up again the next year.
Sure.
But of course there weren't any Indians. Well, when I was small, there were some Indians,
yeah,
but they were friendly.
But it was clean air and clean water, and maybe not until you had the cherries and had to put pesticides on them. Was there any
Is this any of my business?
No, come on in and sit down right here. Yeah.
Because if I don't care.
Come on in, Lillian. This is Eugene Smith, and this is my cousin, Lillian Herman.
Hello, how do you do?
And
I certainly heard the Herman name.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. Sit down. Sit down over here.
Shall I shut this door?
Yeah, I'll sit. And
aren't you a Symphony subscriber?
You got here too late.
Hello.
He